Asking from Nashville, Tennessee. This is Keep Asking, the weekly podcast that helps you dive in a bit deeper and wider into the research providing insights into today's church and culture. Hello, here we are again. I'm Lizette Beard here with my colleagues Scott McConnell and Casey Oliver. Today we are talking about pastor views and feedback on racial reconciliation. So because this has been a little bit of a key topic in news and cultural conversations, I'm not going to come up with a really clever, out of nowhere question that you guys have to answer on the spot, because I saw nowhere that could go.
And for listeners, just see the disappointment on Casey and my faces right now.
I know, because they love bracing themselves for that. But again, I feel like I ask this question a lot. Scott, why are you stirring things up? Why are we asking pastors about this when
we live in a world that's stirred up? You know, there are a lot of discussions that are going on that what puts them in the conversation today is that we don't all agree. And I think in the church we've got to be aware of those conversations, and we have to be in many cases involved in those conversations and imparting truth inside those conversations.
One of the things I've noticed about just the conversations that, whether I'm watching it on the news or I'm watching different pieces of feedback on social media, there's varying levels or senses of people sensing the need to be talking about this. So, why for listeners who may be in a place where they feel fine and they don't want it shoved in their face anymore, why are we shoving it in their face more?
That's a good question, because I think each of us have gone through seasons in our life where, you know, it's been a while since we personally have seen racist acts right in front of us. And we may have gone through a season where we say, you know, I don't feel like I've shown any favoritism. And you know, should I be apologizing for something my ancestors have done? You know, what is left to do? And I think for those in the majority culture, that's an easy reaction to have. And I think it's pretty short-sighted. It's something that kind of reinforces the fact we're in the majority culture, that we are not sensing that there is still a need to make progress in this area. I'm thankful that every year it seems like there's good movies coming out that show how far we've come.
Mm-hmm.
Since before my time, you know, in the 60s and even before the civil rights movement, we see the contrast of how far we've come, and we definitely want to be celebrating that. But at the same time, if we look at the scriptural standard, if we look in Acts 17, are we being one, especially within the church? Are we being one? And the fact is we're still segregated in many ways, and it's not antagonistic most of the time, but we're not actually working together on very many things.
And Scott talked about Acts 17. Actually, our Bible study that we have our college students over at our house for was actually in Acts 6 last week. And I just thought that was really spoke to a lot of these issues. It's with the Hellenistic Jews and the Hebraic Jews, and Hellenistic Jews saying like they weren't being taken care of and having their needs provided for. And just the intentional action that the 12 took in, you know, adding leadership positions for that group that had a potential to be marginalized, and making sure their needs were provided for, and how, you know, that kind of the follow-up of that was basically so the word of God continued to spread, and sort of as you read it, you're aware that this was actually an issue that had the potential to harm their witness of the church, you know, in the same way that Ananias and Sapphira did the chapter before. And so, that's, you know, that, yeah, to me, that's what stands out as saying, oh, yes, this is a really important issue that we need to address, is that it, you know, it's part of what could harm the witness of the church if we're not doing it right, you know.
All right. When looking at this, looking over the questions, I had a picture in my mind, you know, if you've ever seen like the concentric circles of our relationships, you know, we all have those close, a limited number of very close relationships, you know, immediate family, very close friends. Then you move out to good friends, some colleagues. Then it scoots out to, you know, church, well, you know, close church relationships, that kind of thing. And then moves out to acquaintances, very mild acquaintances, casual, you know, acknowledgement of others. But there's only so much room, really, for most folks. And Casey, you mentioned the word intentional. I'm very struck by the idea of to be intentional to bring someone in to a, you know, closer into the circle. There's that sense of, are you pushing someone out? And so, I don't know, for me, the visual of those circles in the relationships, maybe where some of these pastors are, and the ethnic diversity in their environment may dictate part of their concentric circle. For me, it's a good visual just to weigh the pros and, or not the pros and cons, but to weigh the different balances of how people responded. So, What stood out to you guys in the relationships or in the connections you were seeing with pastors?
I mean, I think we to sort of speak to those concentric circles or broadening out circles, we definitely asked a few questions that were in that space of, you know, sort of how broad is your social circle or how diverse is your social circle? And one of those questions was the when was the last time you had a meal with less than 10 people that included someone of another race? And I think to some extent we saw some really positive feedback there, where 44% said they had that in the last week and 73% in the last month. And like Lizette was saying, you know, we're aware that sometimes those social circles for who you're having a meal with, and, you know, a lot of times that might just be your family, and then once a week or once a month you have something beyond that. So to understand that that's, you know, that's something to affirm and celebrate, is that a lot of pastors are saying that they are having diverse, you know, conversations with people of diverse backgrounds or ethnicities.
Scott, talk to me a little bit about the choice of using 10 people is kind of the marker that sounds to me like it's landing at the place of a small group. You know, could be your Bible study group. Friends, but it's not so close that you're talking about the intimate family dinner. You know, it would maybe an in-house, in-home dinner party. But why 10 is the marker of a gathering?
We drew the line at 10 really because that would allow you to include one-on-one lunches you might have with somebody, but also maybe if your family gets together with another family. But the 10 would also exclude gatherings where it may be a group at church, it may be a group from the community where there happens to be somebody from another race there, but that wasn't part of the intention or really the main part of who was gathering.
And just as you were mentioning that, it occurred to me that pastors may have an opportunity in some situations if their congregation already has a significant amount of diversity or their community is diverse or they already have diversity in their staff or leadership. But challenges, if those things are not in place, because if their professionals in their church may be working with a very diverse group, you know, whatever the vocation is. And so there may be those opportunities for work conversations, meetings, lunches, and gaining familiarity. Whereas if the pastor, if the church is isolated, and the pastor is not able, or I say not able, the pastor to do this has to be much more intentional in seeking those out. So that it occurred to me that there's, it's just not going to be those casual work lunch, you know, opportunities that just pop up. Casey, you look like you're itching to say something.
Well, yeah, I guess, you know, as you're saying, so for some people, maybe you naturally have a broader or more diverse circle. And for other people, it takes a lot of effort, or, you know, you kind of have to make an intentional choice to make that happen. But I guess I found that question still interesting about how broad is your circle, because we've discussed that question, you know, not necessarily in relation to race, but more generally a lot on this podcast, of having varied perspective and how that helps us to lead well and make good decisions. But we know that those perspectives can vary widely among and between different racial and ethnic groups. And that's one of the reasons why whenever we're doing a survey, we pretty much always ask the respondents' ethnicity. And it's because we often see some really interesting differences in the prevalent values and opinions among different ethnicities. So I think that makes a really meaningful question to say, you know, our pastor's hearing from people who have varied perspectives with regard to race.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that different racial and ethnic groups respond differently to our survey questions obviously reflects that they may have different experiences and different perspectives in their communities. But even those are God-given. You know, looking at my notes, I think I mentioned Acts 17 earlier. The verse about being completely one is in John 17. But in Acts 17, we read that from one man, God has made every nation of men to live all over the earth and has determined their appointed times and the boundaries where they live. You know, so those differences, those boundaries that make us a little different from each other are God-given. And so, you know, we should be celebrating some of those differences and seeking to understand each other and listening to those perspectives more so than saying that's an excuse not to get together or not to work together.
What else stood out? Casey, you had several buckets as you were looking at the data that stood out to you. What was another one that...
Yeah, so in addition to sort of the how broad is your circle type of questions, we also had some questions about the receptivity of congregations to preaching on racial reconciliation. So one of those questions, we found that 7 out of 10 pastors have not had leaders in their church urge them to preach about racial reconciliation. And but we also 9 out of 10 pastors said their congregations would welcome a sermon on racial reconciliation. So I guess the reported feedback, not necessarily being that church leaders are saying, yeah, go do this, but that they're at least open to hearing, you know, about racial reconciliation from the pulpit, I guess.
And in the last 3 months, about half that many, 45% of pastors, have actually preached on racial reconciliation. And I think there's a lot of ways to reinforce you know, the fact that we're all equal before God in many sermons, but to actually focus a sermon on racial reconciliation and seeking to be peacemakers, I think, you know, takes some intentionality.
I think another piece, sort of, as I thought through this, we asked a lot of questions that sort of in the last 3 months, have you taken some of these intentional steps? And just being aware of the context of that, you know, there were sort of those three separate instances, the Alton Sterling one, the Philando Castile one, and then the Dallas police shooting that all had race as a prominent part in the stories. And I think they exposed some really strong racial divides in the way that people reacted to those stories as well. So pastors were taking this survey, you know, within 2 months of all of that, where you kind of had that heightened sense of some racial tensions. So, you know, you'd kind of hope that maybe for some people that would sort of be a moment that you'd, you know, say like, oh, this is a time to lament some of those divides. This is a time for corporate prayer for healing in those divides.
Not to take anything away from, maybe I should rephrase it, that absolutely I would like to encourage the intentional actions, the, you know, the addressing it corporately, preaching, and So at no point am I saying that should be set aside, but I do think it's important for pastors and leaders to be modeling it in conversation so they can in their own lives. I would encourage more of the one-on-one meals or getting your families together so that you can kind of bump up against what those differences are, because that's when you learn, you know, oh, my assumptions, you know, I was assuming something that I had wrong. I was going by just what I saw on TV, and now I'm hearing it from someone. I'm going to launch into a story. I'm hoping we don't have to stop and cut it. But Houphouet Boigny, I think, is the name of, he's a past president in Cote d'Ivoire. And one of the things that he did, he was president forever. And, you know, not always the greatest, you know, in managing the finances of the country. But one of the things that he was known for to handle the divides and tensions between the different, you know, language groups, people groups in the country is as students, university students graduated, he implemented a program to where if you were in the southern region, you would automatically get assigned to the northern region, and people would be placed outside of the, you know, in technology, in education, in medicine. And the idea, the intentional idea is it's harder to fight with a neighboring group when you know your brother or your cousin is having meals with them. And to me, that's always stood out as a lesson for it's hard to get mad at a group in general when you've had those meals. And so you know there's more than what you're seeing on TV, or there's more than what someone's trying to paint the picture. And it's also more than just the negative, but also it's more and richer than just the fluffy cloud ideal of, you know, holding hands and skipping along, you know, that the real relationship in that push and shove, and I'm not saying physically push and shove at those meals, that would not facilitate. But when you do get the pushback, or you do recognize, ugh, you know, that's not it, or you can clarify for the other person, that is so much richer than just imagining or keeping everything bottled up and pretending everything's okay.
And I think those organized efforts obviously have been very helpful for a couple generations. I think for our generation, we've reached a point where we're kind of rejecting, the forced integration. And I think, but we've got to follow that with voluntary integration. Right. And so we have to personally say, how can I be a peacemaker? How can I help race relations in my own life as well as in my own community? And, you know, so a lot of what we've talked about today is very relational. You know, who am I meeting with? Who are my friends? Who am I reaching out to? But part of it is the humility to say, you know, I'm willing to do that. You know, even though some of the transgressions may, you know, maybe so far back in my family history, I don't know the details. I'm going to be humble about it and say that I need to be part of the solution. And you know, one other thing that's important in the discussion is that much of the racism that still exists in our country is inequalities that are still within the system. And those of us in the majority culture often don't notice those because they don't hurt us. And so we have to listen for those, and we have to look for those so that we can be helping to rectify those injustices.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. Any other highlights before we wrap up? Any other insights?
I don't have anything.
All right. Well, We want to thank everyone for listening to Keep Asking, our Lifeway Research podcast. If you like what you've just heard, or if you want to argue with us, we hope you'll maybe email us at research@lifeway.com. You can also go to iTunes and rate and review us there. Be sure to tweet your questions and comments to us at Lifeway Research and individually at S. McCon, at Stats Guy Casey, and at Lizette Beard. Join us next time for another edition of Keep Asking. Keep asking, learn more, do better.